This week on the College Football Roundup, a battle of titans in Norman, Oklahoma. Florida goes down, Oklahoma State's worst loss ever, and so much more. This is the Monday Report, starting now. All right. Hello, everybody. It is Monday, September 8th, 2025, and this is the Monday Report. I'm your host, H. James K., and today we are going to be recapping college football week two. Boy, we had some crazy stuff happen this week. We had some very expected blots, and as I mentioned in our introduction, there was a titanic battle in Norman, Oklahoma, between the Michigan Wolverines and the Oklahoma Sooners, and that is where we are going to start. So, I want to start today by talking about that game. At first, from like a 50,000 point view, and then kind of getting into the nitty-gritty a little bit later. So, I don't have a script for this segment. I'm just kind of flying off the cuff. So, coming into the season, I predicted, as many of you will know, I predicted that Michigan would lose to Oklahoma. I predicted that back in August, like 6 weeks ago. And to that end, I'm not that surprised that Michigan lost to Oklahoma. Oklahoma's one of the best teams in the SEC, in my opinion. So, from that respect, I'm not too surprised with how the game ended up. In the fourth quarter, Michigan had a chance to win. It was a five-point game. Michigan had opportunities to win the game, and they just didn't capitalize. That's it. Michigan didn't capitalize because of a myriad of things. Oklahoma was the more talented team. Oklahoma was better coached. They were at home. They were more prepared. And arguably, most importantly, they had John Mateer. John Mateer was my preseason Heisman favorite. I'm pretty sure I predicted that. But if not, he's my Heisman favorite. And it's one of these things where there were times where Michigan played. Let's start with him. John Mateer is the best quarterback in college football. He's just gold standard. He was able to do things against Michigan's defense, which didn't look like it, but is a talented defense, that defy logic. Michigan sends an all-out blitz. They've covered everything on the back end perfectly. They even get to the quarterback, and yet he just sidesteps, shimmies, gets out of the pocket, and throws a 31-yard pass down the sideline to a tight end. Quarterbacks shouldn't be able to do that kind of thing, but yet he does, because he's just one of those guys. So, he was incredibly impressive. He had 270 yards to the air, and he had 74 yards rushing. Now, it took him 19 carries to get those 74 yards, and a quarterback running the ball 19 times, many times right up the middle between the tackles, that's not sustainable for Oklahoma. Just not even at all. The reality is Michigan shut down their traditional run game. Just shut it down. And other than John Mateer, they couldn't run the ball at all. And after 2 weeks of that, it is obvious that Oklahoma cannot run the ball. Now, there are going to be a lot of games where that's not going to matter. John Mateer is going to be brilliant, and he's going to throw for 300 yards and four touchdowns, and that's just going to be it. But there are going to be games, Texas for one of them probably, where Oklahoma is going to have to throw the ball and run the ball with success, but especially run the ball with success. If they can't move the ball on the ground, then the defenses are just going to be able to pin their ears back, blitz the quarterback, and just say, fine, throw, we'll intercept it. And that's the other thing. John Mateer throws a good ball, but everything he throws is on the line. He is Mr. Sidearm, frozen rope, low to the ground kind of throws. He doesn't put any air under his throws. And Michigan deflected three or four balls that he threw. And one of them was intercepted. Two others probably should have been intercepted. And that was lucky on his part that he didn't get punished more because of that. So that's going to be a thing. You're going to have to live with the good and bad with John Mateer. He's going to throw picks because other defenses that are more prepared are going to absolutely pick him off multiple times. They're going to keep him in the pocket and say, fine, you can't run the ball, John Mateer, so you're going to have to throw it. But we're going to blitz you because we need to force you to make mistakes. And he's going to make mistakes. So the way you get out of that is by running the ball with your running backs, Jaden Ott. And there was another one, like Benson or Branson or something like that, who was really good. I don't remember his name. I'm sorry. But they need to figure that out, because that's what prevents you from winning a playoff game, from getting to the playoffs, is not being able to run the ball. So on the defensive side of the ball, I was so impressed with Oklahoma. That defense is nasty. Big physical D linemen, really disciplined linebackers, ball-hawking secondary that were able to deflect throws and break up several key throws. Michigan had like one deep shot all game, really, and that was a circus catch off the back of a player by, oh my God, why am I coming up with his name? Donovan McCauley. Holy crap. Wow, that, shame on me. So that secondary was really good. They made Michigan look silly on offense. Michigan couldn't run. They couldn't, because Michigan couldn't run, and then they lost an offensive lineman. They couldn't throw, partly because their best pass catcher, Marlon Klein, didn't even start the game, but also because the Oklahoma secondary took advantage of the fact that Michigan's wide receivers are mediocre. Donovan McCauley shows flashes. Samaj Morgan is a bubble screen merchant. Other than that, there is nothing out there in the Michigan receiving core. There just isn't. So that Oklahoma secondary was able to really challenge the wide receivers challenge the run game. They were saying, fine, we'll give you a wide open field 10 yards down the field. You ain't going to throw it. And if you do, we're going to get to you first, or it's going to be short, or we're going to force a bad throw. So for Oklahoma's defense, they took advantage of the fact that Michigan had no real passing game. Here's the thing. I don't blame Bryce Underwood for anything that happened on Saturday. It wasn't his fault. He was playing the cards he was dealt. It's not his fault that Gio Elhadi and Norton both left the game with injuries. It's not his fault that Marlon Klein didn't play, or that Hogan Hansen was banged up with some kind of leg injury. That's not his fault. It's not his fault that the run game is inconsistent. It either breaks off 75-yard touchdowns or it goes for 2.4 yards per carry. So those aren't his fault. Now, admittedly, there were about four throws that he made that are like, oh, dude, you got to throw a better ball. That's wide open. But even then, he went 9 of 24. Okay, that gets him to what, 13 out of 24? I mean, a lot of the time, it's just Oklahoma played good defense, and they just said, you're not going to be successful. I'm sorry. So I don't blame Bryce Underwood. Now, I also don't blame Sherrone Moore and Chip Lindsey, because we have to remember, Michigan's offense can only go as far as Bryce Underwood is able to take them. And this early in the process, things are going to be limited. You're not going to see crazy motion and calling two plays at once and checking in and out of one or the other. That stuff, that's third-year Bryce Underwood, just like it was third-year J.J. McCarthy, where he wasn't even calling protections until year three. So we got to pump the brakes on the, oh, he's supposed to be, oh, we're, la, 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 la. No. Anyone who says that, like, they need to fire Sherrone Moore, or that was $12 million wasted on Bryce Underwood, screw you. You're an idiot. You should feel bad that you're so damn retarded. And yeah, I said the R word because that's how stupid you are. If you actually believe we should fire our entire offensive staff because of one game. And yeah, I am saying R because I'm a Michigan fan. This is the Michigan fan in me speaking right now. If you actually believe we need to fire Sherrone Moore and Chip Lindsey, you are stupid. You do not know football, because there is nothing they could have done. This Oklahoma team, that defense is disgusting. Do you think Michigan could have done anything with last year's offensive staff against this team? We would have gotten shut out. You should be happy that we have someone who was willing to throw the ball downfield, because those plays were called. They were just defended really well by Oklahoma State. So yeah, I don't blame anyone for the fact that we weren't the better team. Radical. I know. Radical content. Now, does that mean I was happy with the really conservative play calling and the fact that it was run, run, pass, run, run, play action, run, run, bubble screen, punt? No. I was very unhappy with that. But it is what it is. That's going to be the offense this season. People need to understand, Michigan isn't going to be throwing 30 times a game. It just isn't in the team's DNA. Michigan isn't going to throw for 300 yards and 5 touchdowns. You're not going to get freaking Julian Sain throwing 85-yard touchdowns. That ain't going to happen at Michigan. We're going to run for 180 yards and throw for 177 and win a game 27-13. Yeah, that's going to happen. That's how Michigan's going to win games this year. And do I still think Michigan can win 10 games? You're damn right I do. Michigan has an easy schedule. They can do this. They can still, and I know it's cliche, all of Michigan's goals are still ahead of them. This game means nothing when it comes to getting in the playoffs. You win your conference, you're in. That's it. You don't get more than 2 losses, you're in. Cool. All right? You beat Ohio State, it doesn't matter what you do against Oklahoma. You're in. So, this game was a great contest. It was good for Oklahoma. But as a Michigan fan, it isn't time to blow everything up and, you know, raise the alarm bells and say, oh no, we got to panic, we're dooming. Yeah, no. And if I seem a little fiery, that's because I just watched the Lions get their crap pushed in. So, like, I'm a little heated because that sucked. There are less excuses for the Lions coming out flat and unprepared, but we're not going to talk about that because this is an episode about college football. So yeah, that's all I'm going to say about Oklahoma is that, excuse me, I had to take a drink. All I'm going to say about Oklahoma versus Michigan is the fact that the better team won. The better prepared team won. The team with the better quarterback won. Wow. Radical, I know. I didn't expect Michigan to win. On Reddit, I made a like homer, oh, Michigan can win 17-16. But that was if everything went right. If Oklahoma played like absolute ass. Which they didn't. They played like a good team because they are a good team. Michigan's defense will be sorted out by the time we play Ohio State. Just like last year where Michigan's defense played really bad in the first about 4 weeks and then they really tightened it up down the stretch. Yep. Michigan's offense was really bad early on this year and they got worse and then slightly less worse down the stretch. This year, we started bad and I think we're going to get significantly better down the stretch. It's the beginning, folks. Take a breath. And after 12 minutes of talk about Michigan versus Oklahoma, we're moving on. All right, blowouts. Oh my God, there were some blowouts. There were some teams that were just feasting on cupcakes. Num, 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 num. Empty calories for everybody. It was right off the top. Ohio State cruises past Grambling State. 70-0. Yeah. Ohio State hit Grambling in the face. Grambling's face hit the mat. That was it. Like, Julian Sain had, like, an 85-yard touchdown throw to Jeremiah Smith, I think. What more can be said? Yeah, this just in. The best team in the country is better than an FCS team. Ooh, radical, I know. So, do you get credit for that? Not in my book. You're the best team in the country because you are, but I'm not going to be like, oh my God, look how dominant they were. Who cares, dude? You beat up on Grambling State. Yes, they may have one of the best marching bands in the country in all of college football, but they're still Grambling. They're still a nothing FCS team from down south. So good for you, dude. You piled on a hurt. You opened a can up on them. Good for you. Moving on. All right, Arch bounces back. Texas beat... Ooh, gosh, who did they play? It wasn't Kent State. Let's look this up in real time. So Arch Manning had a bounce back game. While I look this up, let's see who did they play. So Arch threw for 295 yards, 4 touchdowns, and once again, he threw a pick. It's one of those things where... How do I say this? They played San Jose State. Arch Manning is a fundamentally flawed quarterback. He's got arm strength and he's athletic, but he's got the worst throwing motion and mechanics ever. And yeah, it's good for him that he bounced back against San Jose State. But it doesn't mean anything. Much like Grambling, It's a tiny little team that you're going to beat, that everyone knows you're going to beat, that you can show up, play like crap, and win anyway. Now, admittedly, 295 yards and 4 touchdowns is impressive. Yeah. And I guess those 4 touchdowns was in the span of about 5 minutes of game time. So that's impressive as hell. But you still have issues. Arch Manning's throwing mechanics are an absolute abomination. His feet are all over the place. His arm angle is janky as hell. He makes bad decisions. These are things that have got to be ironed out, because once you get into this really serious play, much like against Ohio State, that's a problem. That's going to be a problem that persists for Texas. So yeah, good for you, Texas. You beat San Jose State 38-7. But I'm not impressed, really. Now, this next game, I'm impressed. Oregon beat Oklahoma State 69-3. Now, for those of you wondering, that is the worst loss Oklahoma State has ever had, ever. They have never lost like that in the history of the program. Yeah, let that sink in. Oregon invited Oklahoma State, I think they're the Cowboys, yeah, the Cowboys, into Autzen Stadium in Eugene, Oregon, and just said, we're going to pants you in front of God and everybody, and you're going to feel bad about it, but there's nothing you can do because we're better than you, you're poorly coached, and that's how it's going to be. 69-3. You're a Power 4 team, Oklahoma State. How do you let that happen? Oregon was playing with their food. They were subbing people out all over the place. They didn't take the game seriously at all. It was like they show up and get a W and leave. The game, they should have called the damn thing at halftime. What are you doing? I stuck up for Oklahoma State during the offseason, and I said, I think they're going to be better this year. It's time for Mike Gundy to go. Because unlike Texas versus San Jose State, or Ohio State versus Grambling State, Oklahoma State is a Power 4 team. They should be held to a higher standard. They should be a quality opponent for Oregon. You should at least put up a fight. If you lose 35-7, okay, whatever. You faced a good team. You cannot lose 69-3. You can't do it. That is inexcusable. That can't happen. So yeah, it's time for Mike Gundy to go. It's the party's over. Yes, he might have built modern Oklahoma State football, but his time has passed. Oklahoma State has got to adapt. It's just, they should fire him today. But they won't, because that's not how this works. But they should fire him for that, because that's inexcusable. Moving on, Penn State, sluggish. So Penn State played, who'd they play? It was nobody good. I'm in a closet right now, so cell service is kind of shoddy. So Penn State, they won their game 34-0. And I know what you're saying. But dude, that's a shutout. 34-3? What do you mean? It was Florida International. And it took them all day to get that 34-0. That wasn't like, oh, it's 34-0 and they stopped trying at halftime. No, it took them all day to get that 34-0. Drew Aller, where you at? James Franklin, where you at, man? I mean, what are we doing? You got to be better than this. It shouldn't be a struggle to do anything against a team like Florida International. It's Florida International. They've never been good at anything. And yet, it took all day. People keep hyping up Penn State. Like, Penn State, they're like number 2 in the country right now with the new AP poll. I have them at like 7 because I just know that this team isn't for real. The second they're going to play a quality opponent, they're going to trip up and look pedestrian. Because I just have no faith in this Penn State team. They just don't look convincing at anything. So, 34-0, but it took all day. It shouldn't be that hard. Now, another game that definitely wasn't hard. Florida State absolutely buried East Texas A&M. Oh my lord. 77-3. What do you even say? They beat the crap out of an FCS team. Not even a good FCS team. They just ran up and down the field, did whatever they want. It's just, wow. Like, holy shit, man. That Thomas Castellanos kid, dude's good. That offense is something. Now, once again, they played nobody, but boy, after what they did to Alabama and then following it up with this, I'm a little impressed. Now, I don't give them much credit for burying East Texas A&M, but that's just damn. Their style of play is something. And that defense is, that's a good, they got a good defense. So I look forward to their coming games. I really do. I think it's going to be really interesting watching Florida State play football this year. All right. Next, the last of the blowouts we're talking about, Alabama. They played, who was it? Louisiana Monroe. Beat them 73-0. And you know what? Good job, Alabama, bouncing back. It could have easily when they just struggled out of the gate against Louisiana Monroe and win 37-3. And it's like, yeah, they won, but nope, left no doubt. They played angry. They were hitting. There was no loafing this week. No, they were trying out there, and it showed because, and I'm actually gonna give Alabama credit for this one, because usually playing cupcakes, yeah, you should blow them out, but after what happened to Bama last week, they needed this desperately. You couldn't, if Alabama had struggled to put away Louisiana Monroe, do they even go to a bowl game this year? I don't know, but instead, I have questions, but this was an important win for Alabama. Nice water. Helps keep my voice in check. All right, moving on to our next segment. Shocking struggles. We had some weird games. Weird. Clemson dodges a Trojan upset. Clemson beat the Troy Trojans 27-16. Clemson trailed 16-0 at halftime, and there was a pick six in there. Dabo, dude, it's clear to me, now that everyone can pay players and the transfer portal is everything, it's just everywhere, Dabo's time has come and gone. Time to retire, dude, because this Clemson team ain't up to it. Do you win the ACC? Maybe. If you somehow manage to upset Florida State and Miami, who were both clearly better than you. But this team ain't going to the playoffs. I hope you enjoy the ReliaQuest Bowl or some other mid-tier bowl game, because that's where you're heading. You can't. It's Troy. The Troy Trojans are nothing. They're so bad. And they were up on you. They were out of there. 16-0. And it took you all day to claw back and pull ahead of that one. Yeah, you played like crap. I watched that game. You were hot ass in that game. You were awful. Garbage. So Dabo, hang it up after this year. Win eight games. Go to a bowl game. Win your bowl game. And announce your retirement on the field after the game. Save your legacy. Because, quite frankly, Cade Klubnik was supposed to be the guy. And he's just whatever. He's not great. So, it's going to get even worse next year, dude. Hang them up. Win eight games. Win your bowl game. Hang it up. Because Clemson's time has come and gone. It's time for someone who's going to bring a more modern attitude towards college football roster construction. I mean, serious concerns about O-line, D-line, defense, offense, everything. Quarterback play, coaching, time management. They're bad at everything. I mean, yeah, they were able to out-physical the Troy Trojans down the stretch, and they played an LSU team who may or may not be great. Who knows? Maybe they're just bad, too, and Clemson's even worse. We don't know. But the thing is, it ain't going to get better. This was an easy game. This was one of the easier games, and you were in trouble. So, Dabo, hang it up, dude. All right, moving on. Florida got stunned by South Florida. I don't know what South Florida's quarterback's name is, but that kid, he can sling it. He's good. And that coach, I think it's Alex Golesh or something like that. Good coach. He's coaching a Power Four next year. Yep. Oh, yeah, because, good Lord, Florida lost 18-16 to South Florida. The phrase that best describes this game is a simple one. Same shit, different day. For Billy Napier and the Gators, it was the new boss, same as the old boss. Same shit, different day. Sloppy play, horrible clock management, undisciplined, turnovers, inconsistent play on offense and defense. Same thing. We're in year what? Year four? Year three? I think it's four. In the offseason, Billy Napier should have done what every coach on the hot seat does. He should have fired both coordinators, given up offensive play calling, and reformed the staff to save his job. But instead, because they beat LSU last year and they kind of finished a little strong, he decided, nah, my way is working. See, DJ Lagway, it's working. Well, DJ Lagway played awful against South Florida, and their offense is still bad. So, the only thing that's going to save Billy Napier's job is the fact that Ben Sass, the former Republican Florida congressman who was the president of the University of Florida, he left and was replaced by an interim. And now that interim president has left and is replaced by an interim president. And there ain't no way that that interim president is going to fire the athletic director and fire the head coach of the football team when they may or may not have a job in 6 months. Ain't no way. So, does Florida probably come back next year with Billy Napier? Yeah. Should they? No. No. But they probably will. So, it's just, Florida has an impossible schedule. This team, if there's no way this team is winning 9 games like I predicted. Ain't no way. 7, maybe. You have the hardest schedule in the country. And you just lost a gimme. This is a gimme. It's over, dude. The Billy Napier era has failed, and it is time to move on. Boosters, I know you were picking up that $13 million buyout or whatever it was last year. Put that money together, hand it to the interim president, and say, no one's going to blame you. It's on us. Yeah, buy this dude out, because the Florida Gators deserve to be better. There is no reason why the Gators should be this bad, this poorly coached. It's the same problems that they've had every single week under Billy Napier for years. Nothing has changed. And that can't be allowed to continue. All right, and the last upset, I didn't even watch. I don't know hardly anything about this game. Arizona State, what the hell are you doing, man? I predict you were in my playoff bracket. I picked you to win the freaking Big 12, and you lost to the team I picked last in the SEC. I predicted Mississippi State was going to go 3-9. What are you doing, man? You lost 24-20? What? Huh? What do you mean? Blake Shapen threw a clutch touchdown late to propel Mississippi State over Arizona State. What the hell happened, man? Mississippi State is bad. They're not good. They ain't good. And you lost. And yes, it was on the road. Yes, it was on the road. But, dude, garbage. Garbage. So bad. Gotta get right. Next week's game is a get right game. That's for damn sure. Because Mississippi State ain't good, and that result can't be allowed to happen. All right, so next week, we've got Florida at LSU. The big questions for that game, was the USF upset win a fluke, or is Florida just incredibly overrated? Next week's game is a must-win for Billy Napier, and LSU has a chance to bury a conference opponent early in the season. That game is, that's a must-watch, because if LSU buries Florida, Billy Napier maybe doesn't make it to Week 6. Maybe. Who knows? I think he does, but boy. Then we also got Texas A&M at Notre Dame. Can Notre Dame bounce back after a disappointing loss to Miami? Credit to Miami. Their win over Notre Dame was impressive as hell. That was impressive as hell. So, Can Notre Dame bounce back? But Texas A&M, that's a tall order. Mike Elko puts a good defense on the field, and I'm not super sold on C.J. Carr. I didn't think he was that impressive against Miami, and I don't think Miami's defense is all that. They're not some, like, colossus top 15 unit or whatever. So, and for Texas A&M, can they stay undefeated against their first real test? They've played a game or two, and they've coasted, but this is the first real test. So, Texas A&M, show me something. Notre Dame, show me something. Maybe we'll talk about you next week. Next game we got to talk about. Clemson is going to Georgia Tech. Can Georgia Tech establish themselves as the team to beat in the ACC? Haynes King is a damn good quarterback. And their coach, I think their coach is Brent Pry. Georgia Tech, that's a good team. They run the ball well. Clemson, you're in trouble. If you lose, if you get blown out, Dabo should just retire immediately. But you got to win this one. You got to stop the bleeding. Right now, you're bleeding to death. Blood is gushing out of your leg. The wound is big, but you might be able to stop the bleeding. But you got to stop the bleeding right now. Right now, sense of urgency. You got to beat Georgia Tech, and you got to make it look easy. You have got to put a period on this, a point. Just say, no, we are not going to do this. It's got to be this week. That's the urgency. You can't come out lethargic and get blown away by Georgia Tech. You can't do it. Otherwise, this season's going to spiral out of control because that's what's going to happen. All right, South Florida is playing Miami. Now, we talked about South Florida's upset over Florida, but here is when we learn, is South Florida a giant killer that's going to be in the playoffs as the G4 conference champ, or was it just a fluke? They're playing Miami. Yeah. And I guess they play... They play Miami this week, and then they really get into the depth of their conference schedule in, I think, the American Athletic Conference, or whatever it's called now, the American Conference or whatever. So, interesting game. If South Florida, like, plays Giant Killer again and upsets Miami, be on the lookout. Holy crap. Alex Golesh, future P4 head coach. And for Miami, can you stay focused? Miami's next two games are Florida and Florida State. Their two biggest games of the year are two games after this. So this is a dangerous trap game for Miami. If they get caught napping, and USF will bear it, will beat them. Because that USF team is physical. They looked like they were athletically inferior to Florida, but they out-physicaled them all day long. So for this kind of game, you got to stay laser focused on USF. Yeah, Gators are coming to town next week, and you got the Seminoles after that. But you can't focus on that, because if you do, you're going to freaking lose. Yeah, because this South Florida team, they're going to come into Miami, into Hard Rock Stadium, and they're going to be confident as hell. It's like, yeah, we already beat one Florida team that wears orange. What's the difference? We can do it again. So yeah, watch out, Miami. Hurricanes fans, pay attention to this one. Next game next week, Wisconsin at Alabama. Can Wisconsin shake the disappointment label? I'll be honest, this Wisconsin team, I didn't have high expectations going into the year, but whew, wow. Even when they win, they look like crap. Nothing is easy. Everything is a challenge. They look unexplosive. But this game does pose real danger for Alabama. Yeah, you played Louisiana Monroe and you got back on track. But Wisconsin is going to be physical, and especially on defense. You don't got Jalen Milroe this year. So what happens if Wisconsin drags you into a sandpit and says, let's do this thing. Let's get down here in the mud, in the muck. Drags you into the deep end of the swamp. Can you get out of it? Because this is the kind of game that for some reason will have spooky, like Wisconsin will be straight garbage, and they'll take you to the wire because you weren't expecting them to. So yeah, this is a game. This will tell us more than the ULM game will, than the Louisiana Monroe game, because that's the game that really. I mean, the Wisconsin, they're physical. They're crap, but they're physical. They're physical crap. They're a hard shit. They're shit, but they're a hard shit. All right, and the final game to look out for next week, Central Michigan is coming to Ann Arbor to play the Michigan Wolverines. This is going to be the first of two games without Sherrone Moore, and his suspension isn't like the Jim Harbaugh suspensions of, like, 2023. Sherrone Moore cannot be in the building for the next 2 weeks, because next week's game, the game against Nebraska as well, that one's also, he's suspended. So, peril for Michigan from that regard. But, in my view, Central Michigan, this is a back to basics game. This is a fundamentals, get right, play the game you want to play it, beat Central your way, take care of business, and focus on Nebraska. Because the Huskers got a good quarterback, Dylan Raiola, he's real. He's the real deal. And Matt Rhule is a good coach, and they're sneaky physical. And if you get caught napping like you did against Oklahoma, you're going to get blown away. Again. So, yeah. Especially with Sherrone Moore missing. That's going to be huge. Now, I don't know who's going to be the interim head coach. Maybe that hasn't been announced. That's been announced on Monday. But at the time of recording this, which is like 9 p.m. on a Sunday, we have no news yet as to who is going to be the interim head coach while Sherrone Moore is away. So that's going to be a whole thing. And this is a personal thing. I know I said that it isn't in their DNA, but Underwood needs to be throwing 30 times a game in this game. 30 times. We need 30 attempts from Bryce Underwood. Push the ball down the field. Show the world that you can do it. Like, if it was me, the emphasis would be, yeah, we're going to hit the long ball so we can get 300 yards passing. Just to make Nebraska have to scheme for it. Saying, see, they can do it when they're not playing freaking Oklahoma. Yeah, that's got to be a point of emphasis. Be more aggressive. Run him more. Take more shots downfield. Take more risks. I don't care if he throws a pick. Okay, he threw a pick. So what? We need to see Underwood push the ball down the field for his development. To make teams respect it. Because Oklahoma didn't respect Michigan's deep ball. They were sitting on every throw. 10 yards and in. They were just like, whatever, dude. You do you. You ain't going to hurt us deep. And that hurt Oklahoma a couple times because Bryce Underwood got loose and threw a ball over their head two or three times. And there was even, a fourth one that should have been caught but wasn't. But they didn't respect it. They were like, we'll let you have that four because we'll stop you every other time. So, Underwood, push the ball downfield. We need it, guys. All right, that's going to wrap it up for College Football Roundup Week 2. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts or everywhere else the podcasts are available, thank you, thank you, thank you. Please leave a like and leave a review if you can. Subscribe if you can. Spread the word. Tell your friends and family that the podcast is out there. For those of you listening on YouTube, like, comment, subscribe. Hit the bell icon. Feed the algorithm. Help the channel grow. All right. Next week, we're going to keep going with the College Football Roundup. My name is H. James K. Thank you all for tuning in. Until next time.